The church has called this Palm/Passion Sunday, mostly because some traditions kind of combine the two, both the rejoicing and the suffering part in this one Sunday. So it is, as Libby so wonderfully explained already, this kind of schizophrenic day when we move from celebration and joy to reflection on the suffering and death of Christ. The church loves this day and a kind of parade, as sometimes we have children processing down the center aisle, waving palm branches and meekly shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord." I remember a Palm Sunday, probably, 8 or 10 years ago, when our own Micah Stutzman pulled Jesus Jacob Stutzman down the center aisle on a donkey/wagon. And the rest of us lined, the crowds lined the street here with our own palm branches and cloaks as we welcomed and cheered this Jesus into our midst. It was perfect. It was ridiculous and wonderful, as I think the whole story of Jesus riding on this shaggy donkey was both wonderful and ridiculous in its own way. So the question I ask in our sermon title this morning is, which parade will you join? This is one of the most political days of the year, that Sunday when Jesus made clear as he comes into the capital city on the back of a donkey that his way is a challenge to the ways of predominant nationalistic culture. This is the Sunday when we are confronted with a political challenge. Which parade will we join? There are parades that unite a community with floats, with bearing beauty queens and advertisements for local businesses, high school bands, and usually some show of patriotism with veterans in uniform. And there are other kinds of victory parades. Certainly our memory goes back to fairly recent time when millions of people lined the streets of Philadelphia in the victory parade welcoming the Eagles back into town after their Super Bowl win. Our own Bob Moyer was there, and I've asked Bob to share a little bit about that experience. So join me here, Bob, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So, yeah, you should have, yeah. So tell me a little bit about what that experience was like for you.
Well, I can probably say it in two words. Very cold. But yeah, it was probably a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go or if I wanted to stay and watch it on TV. But I was so glad I went, to be in just a celebration with so many people there for the same reason. So it was inevitable. I mean, it was fun. I left about 5 o'clock in the morning from Lansdale, and I got in up to the parade route about 7 o'clock and stood there, not moving.
The parade started at 11 o'clock?
Right, and it came past us about 2 o'clock. So I was standing there. But it was kind of like we had a little party because everybody was there. Nobody could move, so you had the same people around you, and it was kind of, we all kept each other warm because we were so tight.
So what did you experience in the crowd? Just the joy?
The joy, yeah, the joy, yeah. Some celebrate a little more than I did, but.
Yeah. Imagine that. So that's another reason people kept warm.
Yeah, right.
So you were at a different kind of parade, a march, yesterday that some of us also joined as we went to Doylestown. to the March for Our Lives, and some of us were there at Doylestown, Mary, and I hear Trina, you were there. Katie, were you also joined that one? No. And Rose was there as well. Anyone else accompany that one or a different one? Joyce, you were where?
Philly was my
grandfather. Philly, okay. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that parade. A very different kind of parade, you might say. We were the parade. Mm-hmm. We were not looking at Eagles players. People were looking at us coming out of their houses and watching us as we marched. Tell us about that experience.
I won't say it wasn't a celebration, because I found that it was to see so many young people involved in a common cause. Mm-hmm. It was very emotional for me because, you know, I think about all the... I've done a lot of marches in my lifetime, in Philadelphia and Washington and other places. But to see so many young people and speakers were so articulate, you know, from high schools and the junior high schools. And, you know, we were there for a common cause. I mean, to fight and ask for more... to stop all the gun violence. So I was really glad I went, and it's always interesting to see the creativity of people with their signs.
Including your own.
Yeah, I have one up called March Madness. That's what I carry. But it was a great experience. And like I say, it was emotional. And the thing that was really neat was that they only had young people speak. Mm-hmm. And same way in Washington, because there were politicians that wanted to say something who were, you know, definitely with them, but they said it was important just to have the young people speak.
Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
And speaking of young people, Katie, you and Lydia, was Lydia also one of the 225 who were part of another kind of march? On March 14, when you and 224 others of your colleagues, your student classmates at Pennridge High School, walked out of the building. So come and tell us a little bit about that. So, thank you for joining me. I suppose that we all know why this was planned, but you might want to just refresh our memory.
Yes, so essentially there was this, it was kind of planned from the beginning of when the shooting in Parkland happened, but March 14th is the 1 month anniversary of the shooting in Parkland, and so I think that there was a desire amongst a lot of schools in the country to have an opportunity for students to show how they felt about this issue of violence in schools. But it has kind of evolved from violence in schools to just, I think, people realizing that we have a lot of gun violence everywhere in our country. But as far as why people walked out, I know there were a lot of people who were out there that didn't necessarily support gun control, and that they were out there for mental health reform, or they were out there for increased security. Like one of the speakers, there were speakers at the walkout as well. We walked out and students were making speeches, and one of the lines was, whether you're out here for gun control or mental health, we're united... to say that something needs to change, and that was the overarching theme, that just something needs to be different, and so, yeah.
Many schools across the country gave permission for students to do this walkout, and I think the school board was petitioned, as I heard the story, I wonder if Pennridge gave that permission.
Yeah, so the way I heard it, I was gone on vacation immediately the days after the walkout, so I didn't really experience a lot of the in-school repercussions of it, but just when we got back on Friday, I had a meeting with the school, with my grade-level principal to receive my detention slip, because the school didn't end up supporting, but the way I heard it was that the administration of the high school was supportive of the decision, but the school board, which in Pennsylvania has pretty much all the power in a school district, made the decision that they were not going to support this because, well, technically they said that there were safety violations and threats against students who walked out, but the way my grade level principal kind of told me is that that wasn't really the case, and it was more trying to keep down this idea, but they ended up having a alternative remembrance assembly in the school that they thought would they would give so that students wouldn't walk out, but people did it anyways, and for that we received Saturday morning detentions, which are two-hour detentions on Saturday mornings. So,
and that's beginning to be served, right, by groups of students?
Yeah, so only certain number of kids can serve a detention at one time, and since when you there's only like one teacher there to supervise.
There's about 225
of y'all. Yeah, when 225 kids get detention, they can't all go at once. So last weekend, like 3 days after the march, the first group served theirs, and then I know there were some kids who served it yesterday, but I was like at my meeting, I was like given dates, like options to pick when I wanted to serve it. So I think they were kind of being like, the administration was being kind of accommodating, knowing that this was kind of, they didn't want to be giving us detentions for this, so they let us. I had like four options for days that I could serve it. So I'll be serving it April 21st.
Well, maybe some of us will come and support you in that, because I've heard that there's been a lot of support. Have you also heard reports from classmates?
Yeah, the first day there were 46 students who served, like the 4 days after the walkout, and there hasn't been as much of a gathering. The other times, after, like this past weekend when people served, there wasn't like as much people there. But the first week there were, there's like people online who, people from like other states who had heard about Pennridge punishing us and started a GoFundMe to buy, they bought like 15 pizzas for the kids. And so there was a detention free party for like 15 minutes before, and they had like pizza and donuts and like, a lot of parents like came with signs, and parents like stood outside detention for the whole 2 hours like with their signs and like just like a big show of support. So yeah, it was pretty cool to see that. I mean, I had to see it from Florida, but I still heard lots of stories, and there was national news coverage of it too, so it got down to Florida.
And I heard that students decided to sit in a circle with their arms linked for the full 2 hours. And also brought flowers and remembered the 17.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was very emotional.
Yeah, there was you get assigned seats in detention, and so they felt like if they were going to be in detention and be all together again, might as well make it another kind of show of support. So they left their assigned seats and sat in the middle in a circle with their arms linked, and then had the names of every victim on like holding up signs of that. So, yeah.
So if you're on Twitter, go to hashtag Pennridge225, and you can keep current on all the activities that are happening. Receive national news and Newsweek, and last night I was reading a report. The Huffington Post reported on a student and her mother went to the march in New York City and referenced this Pennridge 225. So you're famous, Kate.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yes. Yeah.
But we just want to we want you to know how proud we are of you for taking a stand in a sense, kind of a show of civil disobedience in a way. But hopefully it can be a way of learning for you too what it means to have convictions and to be able to stand for them. Mm-hmm. And so, God bless you.
Yeah,
thank you. Parades in our world and country are nothing new. A parade, as it be a march or some other victory parade, is never just a walk. We go on walks, we take walks a lot, but this is something different. Parades tell us who's important, what's important, give us an impression that though it may be very different from each other, and we may believe very different things, We're all moving in the same direction for the same cause. Like we felt that yesterday in Doylestown or Philadelphia or Washington. Parades are statements sometimes of who's in power, who's in charge, who's most important. And sometimes are read in ways other than what we want them to be read. I remember when I finally summoned the courage as a student at Heston College to walk in a parade / march protesting nuclear disarmament, wishing for nuclear disarmament. I was a student at Heston College, and the parade was through the streets of Wichita, Kansas. I wasn't alone in my convictions. There were people there that were part of the crowd that were there for very different reasons, just as you said, Katie, that those who walked out for different reasons. But we were common, we were united in our desire for change. And I think came away stronger after that experience. There have been civil rights marches that are a kind of parade, and women's marches along with those who counter those marches with other kinds of parades. And often police keep the two sides apart. And it's clear that those who have the courage to covenant to a civil rights march often historically paid a price for marching on the wrong side of the parade, you might say. Some parades celebrate things as they are, like a victory parade. Some parades protest things as they are and march toward a new order and change. Jesus engages in a kind of march parade, you might say. As the people lined the streets, they had perhaps heard of Jesus. They had reflected on his teaching. They had gotten reports of some of his miraculous healings. They had seen him perhaps as a kind of Messiah who would deliver them from the hands of the Romans. So this throng of well-wishers welcomes Jesus with palm branches. And the palm branches weren't just for any old reason. They were symbols of a military conquest nearly 200 years before, when the Maccabeans, the Jewish revolutionary group, conquered their enemies and placed Jerusalem in Jewish hands once again. After that victory of the Maccabeans over the conquerors, the people came out with palm branches, and surely this was a sign of another victory parade. And surely people's hearts beat faster with this memory. Could this be happening again? Could this Jesus just be their hero and deliver them from Rome? And I expect that Roman overlords who occupied Judea at the time were a little nervous. They were nervous when they heard the shouts and saw the reaction of the people in the city that day. Oh, the Romans love parades. Today you can go to Rome and see sculptures of the Ark of Titus near the Colosseum, a sculptured relief of a grand triumphal procession when the Roman army marched into Jerusalem, holding up the treasures of the ransacked temple. Periodically, the Romans would assemble their troops in Jerusalem and march through the city streets just to show Jerusalem who's in charge, just to remind them that the price that they would pay if they tried to challenge the power of Rome. This happens throughout history. It was what Hitler frequently did after he conquered a country or a city, to march through the streets of Paris or any city just to show who's really in charge now. And just behind the waving palm branches and the shouts came this unarmed man bouncing along in the back of a little donkey. Not riding a strong, impressive war horse like any Roman general would, but a donkey. This is the Messiah. This is the King of David. We've come for this grand parade. A rabbi who arrives on a shaggy donkey. It's an odd, ironic parade, this parade in Jerusalem, this grand climax of the saga of Jesus. This is when he strides in to take over and drive out the Romans. It's pretty clear he's not going to do it in the way of Rome, but with a different power. Power of nonviolence. Martin Luther King Jr. in the 20th century probably understood this Jesus way better than anyone. And in his classic letter from Birmingham jail, he wrote to the powerful clergy of Birmingham, Alabama, writing not to government leaders, but writing to the clergy of Birmingham. For the clergy were begging him to tone it down, to go easy on the white supremacy of their city, telling him that a lot of innocent people could get hurt if he didn't back off from his campaign for civil rights. Did King back down? He wrote back to these Christian leaders. Among the things that King said in this letter was that there was a time when the world were afraid of Christians. The world persecuted Christians because they saw a threat in the church to the established order. Now things are different, said King. Now the church fears disruption of the world. Now the church fears that it's no match for the world and therefore must adapt and adjust, keeping things quiet and respectful. And I wonder if we sometimes go along to get along today, and we learn from our own history. Just this week, I read a difficult article that came through T-Mail, the online part of the Mennonite. The article starts out by saying that in 2004, Joachim Wimmer of Germany opened a small wooden box that he inherited after his mother passed away. And to his surprise and horror, it contained letters of his late father that his father wrote while serving as an officer in the armed forces of Nazi Germany. Wimmer says, "I almost fell off my chair when reading his father's letters." He was speaking to more than 200 people who gathered for a conference on Mennonites and the Holocaust. That was in March 16 and 17th at Bethel College in Kansas. Wimmer's father wrote from France in 1941 at the height of Nazi conquest of Western Europe. And he writes, and I quote, "We did not believe we would bring the French to their knees in such a short time. All soldiers who are fighting here for their fatherland are performing worship in the truest sense of the word. Those who do not believe in our victory do not believe in God. The Lord is visibly on our side. Heil Hitler." End quote. Can you see why he almost fell off his chair? And while his father fought on the Western and then Eastern fronts, young Wimmer saw Dresden burning and wound up in a refugee camp where the family received help from Mennonite Central Committee, while his father then languished as a prisoner of war in the Soviet Union until 1949. But it would be 60 years later that these letters were discovered. And he said to the group that were meeting there, "There are probably a lot of boxes that still exist somewhere that were just like mine." Uncovering hidden stories of interactions between Mennonites and Jews during the 1930s and 40s in Europe was the purpose of this conference, which drew scholars from the United States, Germany, Canada, Netherlands, and the Ukraine. And one of the questions they asked, it's a haunting question, could this happen in our day? And they concluded, the sobering answer is yes, of course. And before they became too judgmental of decisions that were made to go along, to get along, they needed to understand the complexity of the situation and not go into that here. But yet, it is stunning and sobering to think we could so easily be seduced into joining the parade that leads to untold suffering, death, and injustice. Today, in the epistle, we intentionally do not read the last several verses after the suffering of Jesus, where God highly exalts him and talk about the resurrection there in Ephesians 2. But today we sit with a parade that ends in suffering and death. And consider what we would do in a similar situation. Will we come forward and join this Jesus parade of nonviolence and suffering love? Will we walk behind Jesus as he moves along his narrow path this coming week, from the shouts of Hosanna to the screaming mob of Crucify Him? Will we lay aside our preconceived notions of power and dominance and how the world really works to take our place in this parade? Will we join the parade of Katie and her other students, standing up against those who would arm us with even more guns in the name of security? For me, doing these little acts, joining these marches, writing these letters, are small acts that I hope, and I pray, will help me have the courage to covenant with the Jesus parade, to join the parade, and to be able to have the deeper conviction, because I've acted in small ways, that when challenged, allow me to have the courage to step forward and join the parade of Jesus and his revolutionary love for all people. May we have such courage. Amen.